We'll go international in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the humble headquarters of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. Just what is the IARU? IARU is the acronym for the International Amateur Radio Union. Rain's half-Polly, KC9RP, spent a few moments in the Rain booth at the 2016 Dayton Hamvention speaking with IARU President Tim Ellum, VE6SH, who hails from Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
The IARU is an international organization made up of about 168 member societies, and that would include societies like the ARRL, for example, in the United States, or Radio Amateurs of Canada in Canada. And what we do is represent the interests of amateur radio at the international and regional level. We will peer for the amateur radio services at the International Telecommunications Union in Geneva and some regional telecommunications organizations. The one that's most relevant for North America is CETEL. And CETEL is the organization, part of the Organization of American States, and it deals with telecommunications issues on a regional level.
How is it different for the IARU to deal with the worldwide theater, if you will, as opposed to what the ARRL has to do with the FCC?
That's an interesting point. There is the international radio regulations, which are a treaty between member countries of the United Nations, and the IRRs, or the International Radio Regulations, contain a frequency of spectrum and allocations to various services, including the amateur service. So we deal with issues on an international level. The most recent example, of course, the allocation at 60 meters, which is attained at the World Radio Conference in October. That is now an international allocation. It's been agreed to by all member states of the UN and the ITU. Then it's up to each national organization to try and make sure that allocation is implemented at a national level. So the ARRL, of course, would be dealing with the FCC on implementing the 60-meter band in addition to your 60-meter spot frequencies, and they'll try and do that over the course of 2016. The actual allocation for 60 meters doesn't come into effect until January 1st, 2017.
How do you enforce IARU regulations?
Well, the IARU is not an enforcement organization. We're an observer body at the ITU. We lobby administrations to try and obtain their support for various frequency allocations. The one that we're working on right now, which is most germane to amateurs in Europe and Africa, is an allocation at 50 megahertz for Region 1 amateurs. Now, that is an international amateur allocation in Region 2 and Region 3 countries in North America and the rest of the world, but it's not in Region 1. Many countries in Region 1 do allow 6-meter operation, but it is not an international allocation. So we're not an enforcement body. We simply try and work with administrations to obtain new allocations for the amateur service and to protect existing allocations.
You being the president of the IARU, are you paid for what you do?
No, everyone at the IARU is a volunteer, including me. We have a number of people who volunteer with us who have a specific technical or administrative background, for example, who can do the appropriate work in Geneva or with the regional organizations. We do not have any paid staff. We rely on dues which are paid by each member society, including the ARRL, that funds our work internationally.
How many regions are there actually? Are there just three?
Yeah, the International Radio Regulations splits the world up into three regions. Region 1, which is Europe, Africa, Russia, and the Middle East. Region 2, which is North and South America, and Region 3, which is the rest of the world. The IARU is organized along the same lines. We have a regional organization in each of those three regions. I, as president, and there's two other officers, we coordinate those activities to help, like I say, protect existing allocations and deal with other issues. And it's just not allocation issues that we deal with. There are proposals that are coming up that we want to make sure don't interfere with the amateur spectrum. So we take a position on those possible allocations and try and lobby, if you like, or work with administration so that those frequencies will not clash or interfere with the amateur services.
Do you have the capacity yourself to vote?
No, No, we don't have a capacity to vote. The ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, which is a UN body, in fact, very rarely takes votes. They try and do things by consensus, which means they want everyone to agree. And that's essentially what happened with the 60-meter allocation. There was no vote on it. It was a compromise that allowed everyone to be happy. IRU does not have a vote. The only people who have the power to vote are administrations like the U.S. or Canada or other countries.
You have more of a problem of a lack of consensus on certain issues, more from local allocation issues as opposed to philosophical differences?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I can tell you all countries recognize the value of the amateur radio service. Some countries more than others. Obviously, those who are affected by crisis, by disasters, recognize the value that we have. But they have to weigh that, of course, with other users of the spectrum, military, commercial, and others. So it's very much a balancing act, and we don't have a vote. So all we can do is try and work with administrations to show why we need some spectrum or why some spectrum should not be taken away and point to the value of the amateur services. And obviously, emergency communications is one thing that we can look to showcase the value of how amateurs can help in times of crisis.
Back in the late 80s, the U.S. amateur service lost part of the 220 allocation, 220 to 222. Previously, we had 220 to 225. Did the IARU have any input regarding that at all?
No, that was a domestic issue in the United States, so that would be something the ARRL would deal with, the regulator, the FCC in this case. The amateur service is not primary at that band, so we would have very little influence we'd have to accept if an administration wanted to take some of it away for a commercial service. So there are some balancing that has to go on. A lot of allocations were primary, which means we're the first user of the spectrum, but many others were secondary, which means we have to accept other uses on the frequency as well.
You're listening to a conversation between Rains Hap Holly, KC9RP, and Canadian ham Tim Ellum, VE6SH, president of the IARU, the International Amateur Radio Union. We'll conclude their conversation from the Rain Booth at the 2016 Dayton Hamvention in a moment. This is The Rain Report, available 24/7 on therainreport.com and via iTunes. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
I would imagine that this day and age there's an awful lot of compromise. Like you say, the secondary allocation has to be a major position that IARU would have to take because of all the pressures there are for primary allocations.
That's a very good point. It's just not as easy as us going to Geneva and saying we want new frequencies. The current process to get a new allocation or to deal with possible allocations which will infringe on us is a 4-year cycle. So that means going to at least 2 or 3 meetings a year in Geneva to try and work with other administrations to advance our position. So it's very much a compromise. Some things we know, if there's a lot of commercial interest, we can compromise on that, try and save something else that where we are primary, for example. And there's a couple of things like that with in-vehicle radars, for example. They did tend to infringe on some of the amateur frequencies where we're secondary, but we were able to come to an agreement that we could move those because, frankly, not a lot of amateurs use those frequencies at the present time, and we save some and we can make more inroads in other areas where there's more contention and would affect more amateurs. So it's very much a balancing act.
What issues do we have these days with over-the-horizon radar?
It's come to a point where we don't think it's going to do much damage to the amateur frequencies. Some of the things we're looking at right now is long-range LAN devices, which might be on the 5-meg band, which could interfere with the amateur services. And then wireless power transfer has become a very big issue, transferring power, for example, to electric tools or to electric cars using various microwave frequencies, but also using some HF frequencies as well, some which are very close to 20 and 40 meters. And obviously that is something we're very concerned about for the propensity of interference, and something we're monitoring very closely at the moment. You know, it's clear, I think, electric cars are here to stay, and people want the convenience of being able to drive up outside their house and simply have them charge overnight without plugging them in. We have to be very careful that those devices are not going to interfere with the amateur frequencies.
Tell me about your roots in amateur radio.
When I was in junior high school in Canada, I picked up a couple of copies of Shortwave magazine, which were very much out of date. They did it from the early 70s, but that sort of piqued my interest in amateur radio. And at the time in Canada, you had to be 16 to have an amateur license. So when I turned 16, I attended a course that the local club put on. The examination was certainly more dragged out and convoluted than it is now. It required obviously Morse code at the time. So it took about 4 to 5 months of preparation before you could take the exam. So I got into that. At the time, there was the CB craze going on. I wanted something more, and so amateur radio was an interest to me. And some of my friends in high school also got their licenses at the same time. I had a very much interest in HF communications, and that rapidly turned into DX and contesting, which I was quite active in, and still to some extent when I have time. So I've been a pretty active amateur since 1977. I do get on the air when I can. When I was going through university, though, I had limited time to do that. But when I came out of university, I really wanted to give something back to the hobby. And I volunteered with our national society, which at the time was Canadian Radio Relay League, which now is RAC. And since I was a lawyer, I said, if you need some legal assistance, I can offer my services. And I eventually started doing some work for them. I became general counsel for RAC and then first vice president, and then got involved with the IARU, working my way up from a regional representative to vice president and now president. So this hobby has been very good to me, assisted me in my professional work and my social skills. And I think it's good if you have the time and the opportunity to try and give things back to the hobby. This is the way I do it.
What do we need to do worldwide to help amateur radio grow?
There's a couple of things you can do. This is a blatant plug for our member societies, but it's important. You should join your national society, whether it's in Canada or the U.S. or elsewhere, because national societies do a lot of good. And you may not agree with everything that they do, or there may be issues that you take issue with, but I can tell you every society in the IARU family does very good work at the national and international level, and a lot of the work that goes on is behind the scenes and not seen by amateurs. If you like the hobby and you're interested in communicating and you want to keep the frequencies, please, please support your national society. They do a great deal of good. The second thing I think everyone can do is to maintain some civility on the air, because that seems to be a big topic right now, is try and be an Elmer to everyone. When I became an amateur almost 40 years ago, I had more than one Elmer. Now I think a lot of new amateurs, they don't have the benefit of someone that will show them the ropes. And if you have the time, please try and take new amateurs under your wing and explain to them how things work and work with them. This is a wonderful hobby, and we should all give something back to make sure it's still in existence 50 years from now.
And that concludes our brief time with Calgary, Alberta, Canada's Tim Ellum, VE6SH, President of the International Amateur Radio Union, IARU. Tim spent a few minutes in the RAIN booth speaking with RAIN's Hap Holly, KC9RP, at the 2016 Dayton Hamvention in suburban Dayton, Ohio. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2016 RAIN. All rights are reserved. Now for our supporters on PayPal and elsewhere, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, available for transmission via amateur radio from therainreport.com and via iTunes.